You're listening to audio from the Cathedral Church of the Advent in Birmingham, Alabama, a church with a heart for the gospel. Find out more at adventbirmingham.org.
Almighty God, we give you hearty thanks for the gift of being grandparents, the gift of being parents, and for the gift of children and grandchildren. Pray this morning that you would be with us and Paul and Mary as they speak to us about being grandparents in the gospel. Pray this all in Christ's name. Amen.
Thank you, Will.
Thank you. Okay. As I don't know if you were aware, but the focus last week with Rita and Drew was on grandparents who live near their grandchildren. Our focus is on grandparents who live far away. None of our grandchildren live close. We have one set in New York, in Bedford, New York. We have one set in Charlottesville, Virginia. And we have a third in Cambridge, England. So nobody is close to Birmingham, not even a direct flight to Birmingham. I thought we'd begin by telling you a little bit of our own family history with our grandparents, because Paul's and mine is very, very different. And our approach to grandparenting meant that we were coming at this with different histories and different expectations. And yet I think we've come up with how we approach it in a unified way. I grew up in a small town in Central Florida. Both of my grandparents lived in our small town. I could walk to both of their houses. One grandmother, who was widowed shortly after I was born, lived across the street from the elementary school that I walked to. So that was very convenient. And the other set of grandparents lived next door. It doesn't get much closer than that. Y'all, come on in.
There's plenty of places up here.
So it doesn't get much closer. And of course, looking back on it, I think of what was that like for my parents, especially my mother, whose in-laws lived next door. It was my father's parents who lived next door. But I grew up with a very secure extended family. I also had first cousins and aunts and uncles that were like parents, surrogate parents for me. I, in fact, related to one of my aunts in some ways better than my mother at times. And my grandparents, though, I have to say, looking back on that experience, they were a safe place. They were absolutely a safe place. They were never involved in our daily activities. They were sort of the cavalry that came in when needed, but not that much. My grandmother, who was widowed, actually worked until she was, well into retirement age. And so they were present. I knew that I could go next door. The wonderful thing about my grandmother and grandparent, my grandfather and grandmother, they were devout Christians, all of them. There were the biggest divide in our family was between Baptists and Methodists. And my grandmother, the widowed one, couldn't understand how anyone would want to be anything but Baptists. And so that was a little joke. But I grew up in the Methodist church, and the grandparents next door were totally benign. Nothing. I have no negative memories of any kind about any of my grandparents. My grandmother used to wake up really early. Now I understand that. She woke up very, very early in the morning, and I could see from my bedroom, I could see when her light was on. And that meant if I woke up early, especially on the Saturday morning, I could go over there and she would make breakfast for me. And the first coffee I ever had was milk with that much coffee. And she made toast in the oven instead of a toaster. Anyway, she was a very definite personality, and loved children. She actually potty trained me. This was a very benign, a really loving situation. I would go over to their house frequently and just sit on the porch with them. It was just, we didn't have to be doing anything. It was just lovely to be there. And my grandfather was a saint. He was a genuine saint. I really learned from him the combination of strength and humility, that they could come together. And he embodied that. He was amazing. And so he also, as I grew in my own faith, he became a source for me. He was somebody that I could go to, and he was a wonderful support to me in my faith, especially when I was in college later on. I didn't talk to my parents as much about my faith as I did with my grandfather, and he was wonderful. So that was my experience with grandparents and extended family. And it was a wonderful addition. Now, we don't have anything like that in our situation now, but I bring that heritage. And also, my parents were very dutiful in the care that they gave to their parents. They were my mother was the primary caregiver for her widowed mother, and my father was the primary caregiver for his parents as they aged. So there was that extended responsibility of the Ten Commandments there as well. And that's what I grew up with. That was what was modeled. And I'm very grateful for that. Sorry, I get very moved. But Paul, tell us about your situation.
I have a much a different story, and it'll be very quick, because then I'll go into what I learned, because I didn't learn it through the psychogenetic background that Mary had. First, I just want to say, when I look out at this group, I see people who I knew when they had little children, and people that I look at, several, like maybe 20 right here, who now have grandchildren. And it's so interesting. I'm in a situation now where I'm presiding at the marriages of grandchildren of people who are younger than I am. And it's humbling, but also wonderful, because I can see stories just looking out here in my own life with you all, and Mary's as well. My grandparents all died before I was born, with one exception. And it just was the way it happened historically. And so there was no extended family. And because of a family struggle, I did not meet my only surviving grandparent till I was about 15, and then occasionally met her, but I did bury her. It just shows you, I did preside at her funeral. So I had absolutely no background whatsoever of grandparenting. And it's just interesting, isn't it? I mean, Mary's life, I found it at first a little bit embarrassing. It seemed like an old movie. When I visited her, what I would have called a small southern town, because at that point it was all agricultural, where Mary was, citrus, and everybody there knew her and her grandparents. And someone came up to my mother at the wedding reception, and she said to my mother, "Your son has married the best girl in Winter Garden." And my mother, that was not the right thing to say, Emma. But
she said, "Big deal."
She said, "Are you kidding?" In fact, nothing could have been better. Nothing could have been better than what she was being told. But it made me, as a father and grandfather, learn about being a grandfather, because that's what this short class is about. I had to learn it, you might say, from scratch, or some tabula rasa. I did not have the remarkable, loving, secure, non-neurotic grandparents that Mary was given by God, and they gave her an extraordinary solidity as a human being, together with her parents. But some of you did not have that. Some of us do not have that, or you're raising your children and you haven't been able to give them quite that. So what I learned about grandparenting came really from theology. So my little contribution now, but it did come. is a little bit about the theology of being a grandfather or grandmother, and then Mary will get back to some of the principles that we have been very happy to learn. We have 8 of them, and some of you have more, and some of you have fewer, and some of you may not have any. People used to say, Paul, when are you going to have grandchildren? And some would say, well, first our son has to have a date. And you may be in that situation. You may have a child who you love very dearly, who just is desperate to have the companionship and the support of a mate. And it just hasn't happened, and it breaks your heart, and it's the number one object for prayer. You may have another child who's met the right person, and it's been a tremendous blessing to you. But what... this is the number one sort of principle. Being a grandparent is a relationship that has potentially very little law and a lot of gospel. By definition and by experience, being a grandmother or a grandfather gives you the way in to another person that is not based on law and mandate and example and telling someone or having to tell someone what to do. A mother and a father have to deal all the time with the relationship between what you believe the child ought to do or needs to do, or in some cases has to do, and presenting it in such a way that they will want to do it. It's the numero uno issue of being a mother or a father is the relationship between what we might call law and gospel. And what we're talking about from our experience is, and you know this if you have grandchildren, you instinctively know it, that the relationship with the grandchild is not at much less likely to be tainted by mixed, by struggle and reactivity than your relationship with your natural daughter or son sometimes or all the time or occasionally is. Now I'll say one other thing about that. An absolutely epic book was written in 1877 by Victor Hugo. Now, you know, you look at novelists and who are the great genius novelists that you can always count on in 100% of cases, and that would be Dickens and Tolstoy and Hugo. They are, without exception, nothing that they wrote is inspired. And the last thing Hugo ever wrote, after written all these other books that we've heard about, is he wrote this, Laudate grand-père, the art of being a grandfather. And it's one of his most important books, but it was only translated in 2012, which shows you how stupid the critical establishment is. And it was his last book, and it's composed of 70 poems that Victor, it's in English now, called The Art of Being a Grandfather, and then I'm going to go over to Mary. What Hugo discovered to his brilliant, inspired joy was that after his son died, leaving a 12-year-old and a 9-year-old, and his daughter-in-law was ill and not able to fully be present in the way that she would wish to be, Victor Hugo, at an advanced age, had to take over the nurture and the love of 2 grandchildren, 13 and 7. And what he learned from that is the art of being a grandfather is the art of realizing that you have an ideal relationship that is not mixed with the oughts and the tremendous sense of demand that the parent receives themselves and the child, and it's uncontaminated. And that's why his book is unique in the history of modern poetry, How to Be a Grandfather. And what we did discover is that with grandchildren, a whole other dynamic was there, that we could have a relationship with a little girl, a little boy, a 2-year-old, a 5-month-old, a 15-month-old now, or a 13-year-old, in which somehow this was not present in anywhere near the degree, and that you could have a relationship of extraordinary delight, and that's not an exaggeration, with a grandchild, especially individually, and especially if you didn't get in the way of their own natural mother and father. Now, Mary, over to you to talk about the dynamics of what it is to love someone like that when your natural son or daughter is there as well.
Okay. Well, first of all, we are in an enviable position that our three sons are all, as most of you know, they are all devout Christians, as are their wives. They're bringing up their children in the church, in the Christian faith. The instruction, we don't have to be concerned with the instruction of for them. Now, I have friends who have taken that on in the lovely way where they have the opportunity, for instance, to take their grandchildren and give the parents a break, take the grandchildren to church, and that becomes a means by which they can be involved in the actual instruction of their children, of their grandchildren in the Christian faith. We don't have to do that. We don't, and we're very grateful for that. But that's very unusual, has been my experience. Other grandparents are sometimes dealing with situations where the children are actually reactive to the parents' faith, and so they don't want their children being brought up in the faith. So that's number one. That's a big thing for us, is that our children are being brought up in the faith by their parents. So that the responsibility, not only of bringing them up, but of bringing them up in the faith, is the parents. What I would say we do as distant grandparents is we look for opportunities to be those graceful grandparents with our children, and that translates into saying yes for any opportunity that we get.
Everyone, without exception.
Everyone, yeah. We really do try to make it happen. If they need us to stay with them while they go somewhere, we do that. And also, I would say that we see our gospel influence is in supporting the parents and freeing the parents. That everything we can do to give the parents a break. I know for a fact that one of the parents went on their 10th anniversary trip, and it was the first time they had gone away after having three children together alone, and we were the ones who were the only ones they would leave the children with. And so we made that possible. So whenever we have an opportunity to do that, we say yes. Now, there are a couple issues with that. It involves a lot of money. It means that we've got to travel, and it involves a lot of travel. It means that in order for us to be with them, we have to, and that's, this is our joy. This is how we, we're not there on the day-to-day basis. So we set aside as much money as we can to fly them to be with us or to go to them and to take care of them. So that's really one of the ways in which, as distant grandparents, I think we try to say yes whenever we can with that. And it's primarily, initially anyway, to give the parents some relief, anything we can do to support them. We were fortunate that, when people ask us, why are you in Birmingham when none of your children are here? Well, our children chose Birmingham, believe it or not. They said, why don't you move back? We did not move to Birmingham without consulting them first. And it was initially the idea of one of them. They said, no, it just wasn't convenient or obvious for us to move to any place where they were. And there are problems with that, because they may move. And we've seen this happen. So for us to decide where we were going to spend our last chapter, it was their idea that we come to Birmingham. And we cleared it with all three boys. And they all said, we know you were happiest in Birmingham, and we love to visit Birmingham. And so that our not being where they are is really by design, with their support.
But we have to take them to fancy restaurants when they visit.
Yeah. Yes, they come, but they like to come. But anyway, those are a couple of the ways. Just always saying yes whenever whenever asked to try to make that happen. And fortunately, we also have my father had the foresight to have a family, build a family lake house in Central Florida. And believe it or not, it's every grandchild's favorite place. And so that has been something that has been our sort of ace in the hole. And that's part of why we were in Florida for so long, is because they love to come to our lake house. And they still do. And so that's a commitment. That's one of the things that we do for them, is to keep that lake house going. So those are the sorts of things that, yeah. That's.
Well, now I'll say one other thing, and then y'all finish it, and then
there's lots more.
Okay, well, you have a lot more. I tend to underline what at least for me are like the broader principles, and Mary does the nuts and bolts. It's a wonderful thing about marriage. I don't know, if you marry a type A and you are a type A, that's challenging. I'm married to an extraordinarily a together human being from the standpoint of human nature. And she would say, she's not married to someone like that. And so it's...
but he is the best grandparent.
We'll talk about that later.
Yeah, he's got the secret sauce for being a great grandparent. And that's what I want you to...
Well, we're going to talk about that now, just for a minute. The key for me in having these grandchildren now for many years, and they're now late teenagers, some of them, is that...
Oh, they go from 18 to 18 months.
It's incumbent upon you to find times when you're alone with one grandchild. Let's say you're at a family gathering, and you're three grandchildren, all of whom you love equally, and you deeply want to connect with them. You really cannot do it. God did not mean you to do it in a group. You have to make a point, which is a joy, of spending time with an individual grandchild. So when we go to Florida, one of our little girls loves to go, what's that place where they dance around all the crayons?
The
Crayola. Oh, my gosh. But I have to take her to Crayola, where she dances with all the Crayola crayons. It's just terrible. But that she and I can have an incredible day, just she and I together. But what is, so individual child with individual grandparent, that is magic. Secondly, I have to be who I am with them. And this is the secret sauce, is I have some, everybody here has this, some idiosyncrasies.
He has some more than most.
No, but I work with my idiosyncrasies, because basically I'm like many of you, I guess I always say that, but I'm a child deep down. I'm an 8-year-old or a 9-year-old deep down. I still adore 1950s monster movies, and that will never change. I would rather see The Crawling Eye from 1961 than Downton Abbey. But what's happened is I've been able to take the children on an adventure through fantasy, just me and my silly, crazy fantasies, which they adore. They just love this. Tell us about this island Earth. We have this island Earth was 1957, and it has a mutant outer space creature with a huge crab hand. I mean, like a lobster, you know, hand. So when I would go to all the children that from the time they were tiny, I would go like this. And the way grandfather's hand will be removed to just say, this island Earth. So I'll go like this and say, this island Earth. Now, for some reason with little children, they love that. That becomes code, our little language. And we have had that kind of fun spirit, especially with the little boys, but the little girls love it. They love it too. I will go alone with them to a movie or watch something special alone, and we plan for that. And it's made a tremendous amount of difference. The oneness and the idiosyncrasy of it. Also, I can't do it because my interest is being communicated to the child, because I actually have the interest. I can't make it up. In other words, it's about time you learned about basketball. They're never going to learn about basketball from their father. It will never happen. Now, they happen to have jocks from the grandmother. Her family has all sorts of people like that, but mine had none. And so, but if you're yourself, I can't try to be someone with my grandchild that I'm not. But if I'm the real person, deep down, almost everybody has a lovable inner child. You do. And if you're that child, I'll give you one example, then I'll stop. But it's been magic. God has given me an individual relationship with every single child. And what happens is sometimes, even now, they will want to talk to you about something that they would not necessarily talk to their mom or dad about. This has actually happened in recent life. They will, grandfather, I'd like to say something, I'd like to talk about something. And I just listen, and they will bring something to me that they will not, for whatever reason, bring to their natural, to their mom or dad, who are all wonderful. One final example. Obviously, the greatest amusement park in this country currently is Universal Epic's Dark Universe in Orlando, because it's the one that is entirely devoted to Universal 1930s horror films, Dracula, Frankenstein, The Mummy. It opened about a year and a half ago, and it's part of Mario Kart. It has more visitors than Disneyland. More visitors right now in Orlando go to Universal Epic than go to any other place. You would say, do you really want your grandchild being taken on a ride called Frankenstein Unbound? Well, the answer is yes. Because they will love it. They will love you. And this is what happened. We've done it twice. That was all we wanted to have the grandchildren. We went on the ride again. We went on five times. And the crowds were okay. But then what happened? Then they say, well, now, grandfather, what we'd like to do now is go on the roller coasters. And they have a whole bunch. Now that's, see, perfect timing, because I don't want to go on the roller coasters. I get scared. So I will go and sit outside the Harry Potter ride, or the, what's the big one they love so much, Sun? I don't know. Anyway, and I would sit, but guys, you go, and I'm there, grandfathers, when they come back, but then it's theirs. You see what I mean? We started out with our little shared idiosyncrasy. Frankenstein Unbound, which is great, by the way. But after that, it became an afternoon devoted to little boys going on roller coasters. And every time they would have me waiting for them when they come out. I'd take them there, I'm waiting, then we have something to eat. And that was a perfect example. They became themselves, but it all came out of a delighted, joyful grandfather time together. So that's what I was gonna say next. Be yourself, focus on one at a time, and allow your natural proclivities, and it could be football, by the way, obviously. It could be tennis, it could be electronics, but whatever you love, they will love if it's in that personal one-to-one way. Mary.
Great, well, so you can see how he's a lot more fun than I am. I have to work at that. I mean, I do things like cooking with it and stuff, but he's really the one that they want to talk to about, and increasingly about important things. And that's been true with our sons as
Lucy,
well.
Boys and girls, especially, that is.
Yes. Paul even has a WhatsApp chat line with the grandchildren.
Two.
Well, one is everybody, but this one, you have one in particular that is really pretty much dedicated to this on earth, et cetera. And they keep in touch with him about that. And
you can do the same thing. We have an app. What's it called? It's on WhatsApp, and it's based on the Twilight Zone episode called The Ninth Floor. And The Ninth Floor was a place where all the some of you remember the show. It was all the mannequins were really real. They were real mannequins, and it's a brilliant episode, which the children have loved. But we call it The Ninth Floor because we go there to be on the ninth floor, where the mannequins are really alive. And you know what? They all contribute to it. All the time. Have your grandfather, if he's done this. And it's turned out to be such a happy, fun thing. And their parents are not on it. They're on it.
So it's an easy way to stay in touch, because from a distance, you've got to come up with creative ways. Our grandchildren in England are grew up talking to us on Skype originally. And so they're used to that kind of using the internet, whatever, for social, whatever. But our other grandchildren are not as comfortable doing that. So just finding creative ways. And I think I know people who read to their grandchildren over over the internet and what have you. Our grandchildren, well, our earliest grandchildren were reading so early that they didn't need to be read to. So it's we just haven't done that kind of thing. But there are all sorts of creative ways that you can do that, that you can connect to them. So you can see why they talk to Paul about fun things. They talk to Paul about, and increasingly as they get older, about serious things. Sorry. They want to talk to me, though, when it comes to money. Because they know that I'm the one who can help them with the, with what they need there. I'm the one that's got the finger on the pulse there. And so we've had to have a kind of, you know, we have a theology of this. You have to understand that that sibling relationships are all about fairness. All about fairness. Any issue in life that has to do with fairness can be traced back to something to do with siblings. And so we have to be very careful. I mean, my father was just so, he was overly careful about this in a way. But so we try to have the same, to try to equalize in our minds what we do to help them financially, whether it's trips or private school or whatever it is. But I would say that for us, the principle is not so much equal amounts every year or whatever. It's much more need-based. And so it's not something we necessarily share with them, with each one, what we're doing for the other. We see it as our role is really to respond to needs. Now, not everyday life needs. But I mean, for instance, when our eldest son went through a divorce, and we were living part-time in very near him. And one of the reasons that we stayed there is because we were needed to, because he basically had his daughter with him most of the time. And so we were needed there at that time in a way that we were not needed by the others. Now, that was an allocation of our resources, not so much financial as our presence and our staying there and keeping that house near them. Now our son, we have a son who lives in Cambridge, England, and what does he need from us? He needs us to help him be part of the family. He's an expat, not so much by choice, but because it just worked out that way. And so he needs our response to, thank you, Lisa, that would be great. Thank you. So our resources for him would be more in the direction of doing anything that we can to help him and his family feel included.
Bring it over.
To bring, that means flying 5 people over from England multiple times, a lot of times, and usually it's at Christmas. And it's in the heat and the peak of the summer. So it's need-based. That's what they need from us, is that kind of help and support. So that's, I would just say that's something that we do. We don't have enormous resources, but that is something that we do try to use for the, we'll even pay for them to get together without us. Because that's also building family relationships. So that's what they, when they want to talk to me, that is often what it is about.
Why don't we, one more point?
One other point that I want to say is that you are always, most children are going to have more than one set of grandparents. And it's very, who is it that said that comparison is odious? You never want to be in the position. You can't help it. But if you have a family who has grandparents that are close by and we're far away, they're going to have a different relationship with the children.
Question about.
And you just have to be very big about that, because that's not something that is available to you, and that's just you really want to avoid any kind of competition with other grandparents. It's all a plus. Everything that the grandparents can do for your grandchildren is a plus. So it's just a little temptation to avoid, but I know it can become an issue for people.
Will was telling us, Barbara, let us stay Q&A now, unless you have one more.
Well, I'll just say one final thing, and that is you can obviously, one of our major roles as grandparents for our grandchildren is prayer. And you know, it's just like your children. Somebody is always in more need than the other. It's also somewhat, I mean, we pray for all of them, but there's always one that needs special prayer. And that's what we try to be aware of, is who is it that we're particularly concerned about? And we do feel that we are very committed. And our children know that. They know that we are praying for their children. And that they value that, and they will let us know that, you know, what are the needs. And so again, it's more we very rarely initiate, we almost always respond, and that's with everything from phone calls to family gatherings. It's up to them to initiate. We don't have any requirements about holidays, about. We have no expectations. That's the law. We have no expectations about family gatherings, about family holidays. Whatever we have is from their initiative.
Thank you. Thank you. We've got about 5 minutes or 4 minutes. I so appreciate you doing that. See me afterwards. We have just a few minutes for comments or questions. Anyone want to say anything based upon what we've tried to communicate? Let's see.
I have a question.
Yes.
Snodder, Courtney, she definitely knows how to call her grandmother. And so grandma my Brumpenal was your account. And she said, hey, can you come get me this? Is that bad? Did she know I'm going to like her?
Interesting. You want to speak about that?
That's burrito. Is that bad? Well, obviously she sees her as a safe place. I don't know. I don't know how I would handle that.
I'm not sure how I would, but Rita is going to give us 30 minutes back dinner. It's a very important question. I take the question. But that's at this moment, we're not dealing with that particular question. Any other correct?
I would probably try to make it, you know, just equalize it with the other. Do you have other children?
They're very close, and she did help me when there was no child free during COVID, and they had just moved back to town.
Yeah.
So they are extremely close. I say for her, so.
It's a plus. It's basically a plus. See it as that. I think it's basically a plus.
It just bothers me.
I can see why it would.
David Tanner.
I don't express my opinion to my kids about it, but I cannot stand the fact that all our grandkids had laptops, iPad, whatever you want to call them, that are, and as I watch them do it, it's just total mindless, you know, it's wasted time, but it's also,
Are you saying you wish you could say something to your
grandchildren? I don't say anything, but, I mean, it, to me, it's pure evil. I mean, it's
Well, again, I would say that's, I'm not sure I'd say it's pure evil, but I would, I know what you're saying. I know that. I would tend to say that's what mom and dad's job is to do. As the grandparent, I can't, I have feelings about it. If I see one of our children, you know, like this 24/7, even in bed at night, I can't stand it. I just want to go in and scream and shout and tear the place apart. But
if they're under our care in that situation, we offer an alternative. And we say, you can, you know, set a limit and then say, but give them something else to do that's more fun. Mm-hmm. And so I also say, you know, you can stay up as late as you want if you're reading a book.
That doesn't hurt. Gates, and then that last question, and then we're done.
I was just thinking about compensating with my grandchildren for what I didn't give Marshall.
Very important. Doesn't sound like to me you all are trapped in that sort of psychology, but there is a sense in which I'm going to do it better with my grandchildren than I did with my children.
Wow.
Can you speak to that at all?
Can you speak?
I understand it, and I can feel it, and I certainly have felt it in my own life. You know, I would like to do better than my parents may have done to me, or whatever that. But if I think too much that kind of way, it becomes percentages, it becomes law in the sense of a demand and guilt. And I understand it, and I feel it, but what you really want with grandchildren is to have, like Victor Hugo, a landscape in which all is delight and grace and a profound unmerited favor that they will get from the grandfather and mother that they will not get from their mom or dad. So I have to make a distinction between trying to be their dad or refathering them and being a slightly detached grandfather who only brings really good DVDs.
But this one, last one.
This Rita had last week from the Harvard study that I think is so great. Rita. And it's really, a child requires progressively more complex joint activity with one or more adults who have an irrational, emotional relationship with the child. Somebody's got to be crazy about that kid. That's number one. First, last, and always. I just think that is pure grace. And that is really what we're talking about. And I think it's what I grew up with. It's what God intended, is that the grandparent has this role of pure grace. Because the parents have got to say, put away the laptop, you know, whatever. And we don't have to be the ones who do that. So it's God's, part of God's design that grandparents can be the more graceful ones. And I pity the ones who have to be involved in actually bringing up their grandchildren, who are the unpaid nannies. I think that complicates things, because as they talked about last week, you're going to end up having to discipline them and what have you. And you also have to be so careful about not intruding on and doing for them what the parents are not doing. Or whatever, you have that relationship of not wanting to overdo it with your own children. So we're very grateful. We'd like to see more of them, but we also see the positives in this.
Mary and Paul, thank you very much.
You've been listening to audio from the Cathedral Church of the Advent. If you live in Birmingham or find yourself visiting, we hope you will join us at one of our Sunday services. Find out more at adventbirmingham.org.